One of the reasons that people fear death is because they're not sure of the true Dhamma. Now, there are a lot of people who never even heard of the true Dhamma, but still they don't know what's going to happen after death. Is there such a thing as a deathless element? Is death a wipeout? Can your actions have any influence on what happens after death? If you're not sure about these things, death is a very frightening prospect. One moment you're here, and then who knows? That's the attitude. Now, the Buddha said you overcome that fear when you actually do come to see the true Dhamma. That's when you gain what's called the Dhamma eye. It's expressed in the canon as whatever is subject to origination is all subject to cessation. And it's portrayed in the canon in many places where people have no background in the Buddhist teachings at all except for what one talk. So they haven't heard beforehand that that's what the Dhamma eye is supposed to be. So how would that phrase occur naturally to the mind? Well, be it through an experience of the deathless, something that is not subject to origination, it's not subject to passing away. And in seeing that, you basically step outside of time and space. And stepping outside, you see how long time has been. Your experience of time didn't begin with the date you were born. It went way back, and potentially it can go on for a long time. Now, for people who have had that Dhamma, they know that there's a limit to how much further they're going to have to experience birth and death. And they realize there's something that doesn't die. So they can face death with a lot more confidence. The only fear they might have about death would be about the pain around the death. But in a phrase in the canon, they have no fear of what happens after death. So that's how you overcome that fear. But to practice to overcome that fear, you have to accept certain things. This is where verified confidence in the Dhamma, which is knowledge of the true Dhamma, differs from taking refuge in the Dhamma. And taking refuge, you're still not sure. There's still going to be some doubt, especially in the beginning. But you see that the Dhamma makes sense, particularly the Dhamma of karma and rebirth. That your actions really do exist. There were people in the time of the Buddha who said actions didn't exist at all. The only things that really existed were unchanging elements. Everything else was an illusion. The Buddha said, no, actions really exist. They're shaped by your intentions, and they're going to give results in line with those intentions. And those results can either happen in this lifetime or in future lifetimes. But future lifetimes are shaped, or the possibilities of future lifetimes are shaped by our actions now. Now, the Buddha didn't say he could prove that to anybody ahead of time. At least he couldn't give an empirical proof. He did give pragmatic proofs. One is that if you accept this teaching, you're much more likely to behave in skillful ways. You can look at your behavior and there'll be a sense of well-being that goes with that, that you haven't harmed anybody. The second is it doesn't make any sense to cut yourself off from possibilities. If you were to believe that your actions didn't have any consequences, then you wouldn't be able to accomplish anything with your actions. You'd just be waving your hands around in empty space. Whereas if you believe that your actions do have consequences, and that it is possible through your actions to put an end to suffering, that opens possibilities that you would otherwise close off. Now, why close them off when you're not 100% sure? So those are the pragmatic proofs. And it's up to us to decide whether they're convincing or not, worth taking on as working hypotheses. Because that's what conviction is in the beginning. You say, well, let's give it a try. And the Buddha says, it's perfectly fine. In fact, he even has a version of what's known in the West as Pascal's Wager. If there is such a thing as a future lifetime, and it is determined by your actions, then you will have been prepared for it. And if there's not, well, at the very least, you can hold yourself honorable in your behavior now. Because the principles that the Buddha said give rise to happiness are harmless principles. The roots of skillful action, greed, aversion, and delusion. One of the ways you overcome uncertainty about the Dharma is to look in your mind to see that when you act on greed, aversion, and delusion, what are the results? When you act on their opposite, what are their results? This is where you have to be honest and very observant to see which actions are connected to which results. And the Buddha gives an interesting test case. He says, develop the Brahma-viharas. First, look at your actions. Straighten out your actions. No killing, no stealing, no illicit sex. No lying, no harsh speech, no divisive speech, no idle chatter. No inappropriate greed, no ill will in holding right views about action. Straighten out those actions. Cleanse the mind, the Buddha said, because it's through these kind of actions that you're cleansed. And then develop the Brahma-viharas, goodwill for all beings, compassion for all beings, empathetic joy, equanimity for all beings. And don't do it as an idle pastime. Make it part of your motivation that these attitudes will govern your actions. When you act on these principles, the Buddha said, again, even if there were no rebirth, even if karma didn't have any consequences beyond this lifetime, still you look at yourself and you are pure in your intentions. Make a great sense of well-being that would come with that. That's the test case, but it's not the total case. A couple of years back, there was a movement to rewrite the canon to say that the Brahma-viharas were complete practice. But as the Buddha himself said in many places, the practice of the Brahma-viharas, even though it leads to high levels of rebirth, doesn't lead to dispassion. Unless you really look at the state of mind that results from those Brahma-viharas. Because after all, you can get the mind into good, strong concentration. There's one passage where the Buddha says you can get into the first jhana with the first Brahma-vihara, the second with the second, the third with the third, the fourth with the fourth. But there's another where he says you can use the concentration based on the Brahma-viharas and analyze it in terms of the factors for awakening. You see that state of mind as something fabricated. And as we all know, once you start thinking in terms of fabrication, that's the way you breathe, that's the way you think, talk to yourself, the perceptions you hold in mind, the feelings you hold, focus on. These things fabricate your sense of the body, they fabricate your words, they fabricate the mind. And when you begin to see what you're doing, you begin to realize that your experience is not just given to you, that you're out there actively shaping it. And the fact that it's shaped means there's going to be some stress. No matter how good the experience, it's going to be stressful. You begin to realize this applies to everything in the six senses. No matter how good a sensory experience may be, there's going to be stress because it has to be fabricated in order to make sense, in order to be an experience. So that's one way of inducing dispassion based on the Brahma-viharas. But in all cases, to get to that state where you have confirmed your conviction, it's going to require dispassion. The Buddha made a comparison. He said it's like hunting an elephant. The elephant hunter goes into the forest and sees big footprints. He wants a big bull elephant because he's got work that needs to be done. But because he's an experienced hunter, he realizes that these may not be the footprints of a bull elephant, because there are dwarf females with big feet, but they look promising. So he follows on. He sees scratch marks up in the trees. Now this could be the scratch marks caused by the tusks of the bull elephant, but they could also be those caused by the tusks of skinny, tall females who couldn't be able to do the work. But still they look promising, so he moves on. He finally sees the bull elephant in a forest clearing. That's when he knows he's got his bull elephant. In the same way the Buddha said, the footprints, gaining concentration, which would be, in this case, through the Brahma-viharas. The scratch marks would be the psychic powers that come from concentration. Even that's not a proof that the Buddha knew what he was talking about. It still doesn't confirm your conviction in the Buddha, but it looks promising. So you keep on practicing. And finally get to the point where you have that experience of the deathless. That's when you know. The problem is for us, and this is where the analogy breaks down, that elephant hunter has seen elephants before, knows all the kinds of elephants there are, knows that there's such a thing as a bull elephant. For us, in the very beginning, we're not sure. The Buddha is teaching us something we've never seen, the deathless. So this is why we have to take refuge first, take working hypotheses first, make wagers first. Because that's the way it is in the world when there's no certainty. You look at the world as a whole. Everybody out there is wagering on a particular belief about action, one way or another. What kind of results you can get from actions and how far those results go. And it's a lot of guesswork and a lot of unhealthy, unwise wagers that people are making. So here's the Buddha offering you something. He says it's a wise wager. However things turn out, you turn out well. And if it turns out that it really is true what he promised, then the wager is more than repaid. So the Buddha doesn't demand 100% allegiance right from the beginning. He doesn't ask that you swear up and down that you take him as your personal Lord and Savior. He says he realizes you're making a gamble. But he's confident in his own experience, and he's confident in the experience of the many students who followed him, that this actually does work. So when our own practice doesn't seem to be going anywhere, think about the Buddha's recommendations. Work on the Brahma-viharas. Get very clear about what is skillful and unskillful in your mind. So you have to be some confirmation inside. That'll give more strength to your conviction. And help keep you on the path to the point where that conviction becomes verified confidence. And it's at that point that there's no more fear of death. So, do what you can to see if that's true.